Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 9, Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy, Text 21. Jannabhi Padma Bhavanad Aham Asamidya.
Jannabhi Padma
Jannabhi Padma Bhavanad Ahana Samidyam.
Jannabhi Padma Bhavanad
Lokatrayopakarano Jadanagrahaina. Lokatrayopakarano Jadanagrahaina. Tasmai namasta udarastha bhavaya yoga.
Tasmai namasta udarastha bhavaya yoga.
Nidravasana vikasan nalinekshanaya. Jannabhi Padma Bhavanadahamasamidya.
Jannabhi Padma
Lokatrayopakarano Jadanagrahena. Tasmai namasta udarastha bhavaya yoga.
Tasmai namasta udarastha bhavaya yoga.
Nidravasana vikasan nalinekshanaya. Jannabhi Padma Bhavanad Ahamasamidya.
Jannabhi Padma
Lokatrayopakarano Jadanugrahena. Tasmai Namasta Udarastha Bhavaya Yoga.
Tasmai Namasta
Nidravasana vikasan nalinekshanaya. Yat, whose nabhi, navel, padma, lotus, bhavanat, from the house of
Aham, I,
Asam,
became manifested.
Idya, O worshipable one, Lokotraya, the three worlds, Upakaranaha, helping in the creation of Jat, whose
Anugrahena,
by the mercy,
Tasmai,
unto him,
Namaha,
my obeisances, Te, unto you, Udarastha, situated within the abdomen, Bhavaya,
having the universe,
Yoga Nidra Avasana,
after the end of
the
transcendental sleep,
Vikashat,
blossoming,
Nalinekshanaya,
unto him
whose opening eyes are like
lotuses.
Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. O object of my worship, I am born from the house of your lotus navel for the purpose of creating the universe by your mercy. All these planets of the universe were stationed within your transcendental abdomen while you are enjoying sleep. Now, your sleep having ended, your eyes are open like blossoming lotuses in the morning. Please repeat after me. O object of my worship,
O object of my worship,
I am born from the house of your lotus navel.
I am born from the house of your lotus navel.
For the purpose of creating the universe,
for the purpose of creating the universe,
by your mercy.
By your mercy.
All these planets of the universe were stationed within your transcendental abdomen while you were enjoying sleep. Now, your sleep having ended, your eyes are open like blossoming lotuses in the morning. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Brahma is teaching us the beginning of archana regulations from morning, 4 o'clock to night, 10 o'clock. Early in the morning, the devotee has to rise. Early in the morning, the devotee has to rise from his bed and pray to the Lord. And there are other regulative principles for offering Mangala Arati early in the morning. Foolish non-devotees, not understanding the importance of archana, criticize the regulative principles. But they have no eyes to see that the Lord also sleeps by His own will. The impersonal conception of the Supreme is so detrimental to the path of devotional service that it is very difficult to associate with the stubborn non-devotees who always think in terms of material conceptions. Impersonalists also think backwards. They think that because there is form in matter, spirit should be formless. Because in matter there is sleep, in spirit there cannot be sleep. And because the sleeping of the deity is accepted in archana worship, the archana is maya. All these thoughts are basically material. To think either positively or negatively is still thinking materially. Knowledge accepted from the superior source of the Vedas is standard. Here, in these verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that archana is recommended. Before Brahma took up the task of creation, he found the Lord sleeping on the serpent bed in the waves of the water of devastation. Therefore, sleeping exists in the internal potency of the Lord, and this is not denied by pure devotees of the Lord like Brahma and his disciplic succession. It is clearly said here that the Lord slept very happily within the violent waves of the water, manifesting thereby that he is able to do anything and everything by his transcendental will and not be hampered by any circumstances. The Mayavadis cannot think beyond his material experience, and thus he denies the Lord's ability to sleep within the water. His mistake is that he compares the Lord to himself, and that comparison is also a material thought. The whole philosophy of Mayavad school, based on not this, not that, neti neti, is basically material. Such thought cannot give one the chance to know the Supreme Personality of Godhead as He is. Jannabhi padma bhavanad ahamasamidya lokutrayopakarana jadanugrahena tasmai namasto udarastho bhavaya yoga nidravashana vikashan nalinekshanaya. O object of my worship, I am born from the house of your lotus navel for the purpose of creating the universe by your mercy. All these planets of the universe were stationed within your transcendental abdomen while you are enjoying sleep. Now, your sleep having ended, your eyes are open like blossoming lotuses in the morning. So, Brahma is offering his prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the beginning of creation. Brahma appeared from the lotus navel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then he had been instructed by the Lord from within his heart, and having done that, Brahma then saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead and had been instructed by the Lord that he should create this universe. The basic structure of the universe was already made, was already created. Now Brahma had to do the further interior decoration. The house has been built. Now the interior decoration and get the tenants. And that was Brahma's job. So, who are the tenants of this universe? The conditioned souls. And Brahma not only got the tenants, Brahma gave them specific bodies also, according to their ability, according to their propensity. So, this is the beginning of creation. That's why we can see that how scientific the informations are, the Vedic informations are. Especially in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's absolutely scientific information. It's a pity that people mistake these informations to be fairy tales, mythology. They mistake this to be some sort of concocted ideas. That is because they do not study this subject properly. They are not fortunate enough to receive the information. And the main qualification of studying this subject is faith. To have faith and faith in the words of the teacher. The books are there. To study the books, to understand the books, we need the guidance of a teacher, qualified teacher. And a qualified teacher explains. But to begin with, if the person doesn't have faith, then how can he possibly understand the subject? Especially when this subject matter is beyond our sense perception. Practically all the subjects are beyond our sense perception, but we have faith in the teachers, and that's what we learn. Like we can consider when we are children, like we are taught, this is A, this is B. We didn't know at that time what is A or what is B. But mother said, this is A. And we accept it, this is A. This is B. We didn't question at that time why this is A. I don't accept it. It's A. Or I do not. It's not A. It's a triangle. We didn't think like that. We just accepted with faith. So to receive knowledge, the faith is the most important element. Unless and until we have faith, we cannot possibly understand any subject. So whether it is material, any of the material branches, or whether it is a spiritual information. Therefore, Adho Shraddha, the beginning, at the very beginning, what is needed is Shraddha, faith. Then comes Sadhu Sangha. The association of the devotees who are also studying the same subject. So it's a gradual progression. And now here we can see how this whole creation came about. It is not possible to understand how the creation came about. Like, our situation is so insignificant. Our intelligence is so insignificant. We are so tiny. Our ability is so minimum that it's not possible for us to understand. Especially when you are dealing with a subject which is beyond our sense perception. But systematically, we learn. What is the systematic development of this knowledge? The first knowledge is that we are not material, we are spiritual beings. We are spiritual. Our actual identity is spiritual. We are not this body. The body is made of matter. This body, this is not, this material body is not my real identity. Then you begin to realize that this body is alive because I am here. I am in this body. The body has consciousness because the soul, me, is in the body, and this consciousness is being transmitted through the body. Very simple understanding. It's common sense. Ultimately it is common sense. These are all actually a matter of common sense. Simple common sense. Can this pair of glasses see? Who sees? Only when the glasses are tuned into my eyes. I see. This glass, through the glasses I see. Similarly, these eyes cannot see. It is me, the spirit soul, because these eyes are connected to the spirit soul, that's why it can see. And it's a long process. It's a very, very intricate process. The soul is giving out consciousness. And that consciousness is projected through the mind. Then the mind is connected to the eyes, external senses. No, eyes cannot see also by itself. Even in a living body, the eyes cannot see. Only when the mind is connected to the eyes can see. We see then, like there may be some object in front of our eyes, but we don't see. But only when the mind is projected through that, and the mind is focused, then we register that object. So Vedas are very systematically giving us that understanding. You speak of science, this is the ultimate science. So the first understanding is, I am not this body, I am a spirit soul. That spirit soul is not a product of the material nature. The spirit soul came from the spiritual sky. We all came from the spiritual sky. None of us was generated here. The body has been generated here in the material nature. But not me. I came from the spiritual sky. And in the spiritual sky, everything is spiritual. Meaning, in the spiritual sky, everything is conscious. In the spiritual sky, everything is eternal. And in the spiritual sky, everyone is blissful. Everything is blissful. And actually, in the spiritual sky, there is no difference between body and thing. In the material nature, there is a difference. Thing means inert. Body means alive. Every body is living. But everything may not be living. The inert object we identify as thing. Like we all are bodies. Every body. Some body. But this is something. We don't call this somebody. Do we? So what's the difference? Living things are body and inert things are things. But in the spiritual sky, everything is living. Everything is living. In the spiritual sky, yes, this plate is living. But it's functioning in a different way. It doesn't move by itself. It's waiting for somebody to come and use him in the service of Krishna. But they can move also. They can move also. Like there is an incident. Krishna's pillow one day was thinking, I'm so unfortunate. I don't get a chance to serve Krishna's lotus feet. I am always in Krishna's head. So, that day, the pillow moved towards Krishna's feet. And Lalita Devi, who makes arrangement for Krishna's bed, she became very upset. She thought that the gopi, who was supposed to make Krishna's bed, she became so absent-minded that instead of putting the pillow towards Krishna's head, put it on Krishna's leg. And she started to chastise him. But then they found out that it was not her mistake. It was the pillow himself. Pillow himself moved towards Krishna's lotus, Krishna's feet, with an intention to serve Krishna's lotus feet. And we also get descriptions like when Krishna moves in Vrindavan, what happens? Krishna puts his step and the earth becomes ecstatic. And in ecstasy, the earth begins to dance. And it seems that the earth is moving. When Krishna goes to Jamuna, the waves rush towards Krishna to embrace him. So this is how they are living. The trees, as soon as Krishna comes, immediately they become filled with flowers. The flowers are the ecstasy of the trees. Ecstasy, their joy is expressed in the form of flowers. And the flowers also are living entities. The flowers, in their ecstasy, they immediately bloom. So this is how the spiritual sky is. And this is how dynamic the spiritual sky is. It's moving. Braja. Braja. Braja means movement. Braja. Whereas material is static. Everything is static. Inert. Spiritual, everything is dynamic. So this is the spiritual sky. And then when you enter into the spiritual sky, then you get to know about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Source of everything. The Supreme Spiritual Personality. The Supreme Joyful. The Supreme Conscious. The Supreme Absolute Truth. Now those who do not have that knowledge, it is their misfortune. Those who do not want to accept that knowledge, they're even more unfortunate. Those who do not have the knowledge are unfortunate. But those who, in spite of having the opportunity, do not receive that knowledge, they're even more unfortunate. Like, to have the ability to see, is it fortunate or unfortunate? Consider a person blind, he cannot see. How unfortunate he is. How much he is missing out. He can't see. His life is practically meaningless. You see a blind man, how miserable he is. Now similarly, those who are spiritually blind, they are so unfortunate. And even more unfortunate, even in spite of having the eyes, if somebody doesn't utilize the eyes and doesn't see. He has eyes, but his eyes are closed. So how unfortunate. Therefore, when these informations are available from a proper source, we must take advantage of that. Must take advantage of that. This information is so wonderful. Not only the Lord, like now when you get to know the Lord, okay, somebody is somebody became aware of the existence of the Lord. Yes, there is something spiritual. But if you think that the spiritual doesn't have any shape, spiritual doesn't have any form, spiritual doesn't have any identity, it is all inert. It's meaning that it is inert, non-existent. It's nothing. They're missing out on that. The impersonalists are unfortunate in that sense. They just don't want to understand that there is a spiritual reality and the variety that is there in the spiritual reality. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has declared that klesho adhikataras tesham abhyakta shakta chetasham, that those who are attached to abhyakta, unmanifest. Unmanifest means shapeless, formless, impersonal. They're very unfortunate. And what they get? Unfortunate people, what do they get? They only get sufferings. That is they are unfortunate. Unfortunate people suffer, fortunate people enjoy. So those who are fortunate, they are actually enjoying. Like Prabhupada used to say, like these Mayavadis, they're so dry. They say, don't eat. But we say, eat as much as possible. Mahaprasad. Akantho puriya karo prasad seva. Now tell me, who is more fortunate? Those who is not eating or who is eating? So all their efforts, all their activities are so painful, so miserable, so source of suffering. And they're missing out on that. They're missing out on the loving exchange. They cannot possibly have a loving exchange. How can you love something that doesn't have any consciousness, that doesn't have any shape, that doesn't have any form? So not only has a shape, he is the source of all consciousness. He is a personality. He is a person. And then we get to know the qualities of that person. Oh, he is so beautiful. He is so strong. He is so powerful. He is so wise. He is so famous. And he is so rich. Isn't it wonderful to have a relationship with a person like that? In simple words, we can say, won't it be wonderful to have a father? Don't we want a father who is the richest, who is the most famous, who is the most powerful? Won't you be proud to have a father like that? And yes, we have a father. We have a father. Only thing is that we forgot about him. We forgot our relationship with him. When you were young, didn't you think that, oh, my father is the best? And in reality, our father is the best. He's the best father. He's the richest, he's the wisest, he's the most powerful, he's the most caring. And when we have the shelter of such a father, then why should we worry about anything? Just consider, people are so afraid of terrorists today. I was basically trying to touch that topic yesterday. People are living in such anxiety today. Not only in India, not only in Bombay, everywhere. After a terrorist attack, Bombay is in a bad shape. There are so many Bombaywalas and Walis. They will confirm that. Actually, soon after that, soon after the terrorist attack in the hotel, people stopped going to the hotels. They stopped going to the Shopping malls became deserted. They became empty. Not only in Bombay, even in Delhi, people stopped going to the shopping malls because they're afraid of terrorists attacking. Now, if we live in fear, there is no end to it. We'll constantly live in fear. Because there is so much. There are so many possibilities of danger in this material nature. And besides that, in our mind we can create so many possibilities of danger. Oh, maybe right now Bin Laden is coming. But when we read Srimad Bhagavatam, then we see these people, Kamsa. What to speak of Kamsa? Even Kamsa's small chelas are far more powerful than these insignificant people. These Bin Laden and Fin Laden. Compared to Kamsa, they are most insignificant. When these, can just imagine how powerful these people were. Trinavarta came in the form of a tornado. Can you imagine this? He can turn himself into the most dangerous cyclone, the most dangerous tornado. He can create a storm that can make houses. This is what happens in tornado. In the course of tornado, if something comes, like a big truck, you know what happens? The truck just goes up when the tornado. And then it drops. The houses, they're just twisted. Big multi-storied buildings. They're just twisted. All you see is just a steel structure. Twisted in a thing. Nothing is left of the house. This building. That's how powerful this tornado is. So this Trinavarta could make himself into a tornado like that. And he came to kill Krishna. But Krishna is so concerned. Krishna knew. See, here he is. All cognizant. Omniscient. He knows everything. So Krishna knew, okay, now Trinavarta is coming. Okay, fine. Krishna was on his mother's lap at that time. And Krishna, how old Krishna was? Just a little baby. Just few months old. And a little baby in his mother's lap. And Krishna thought that I am on my mother's lap, now this guy is coming. So he will carry my mother also along with me. So better spare my mother. So Krishna became so heavy, Mother Yashoda couldn't keep Krishna on her lap. So she placed Krishna on the floor. And at that time Trinavarta came and took him away. So this is how caring Krishna is. So that nothing happens to my mother. So many demons came, although they came to kill Krishna, but it caused fear in the hearts of the residents of Vrindavan. And what did they do? Did they try to fight with those demons? No. They didn't fight with the demons. They simply took shelter of Krishna. And Krishna took care of them. Just consider, one day, this terrible forest fire. This came in a very strange way. The cowherd boys were tending the cows, and the forest fire came from all four sides. From all four sides, the forest fire encircled them. So they are trapped in the middle. So how do you feel? Or if all of a sudden there is a fire, if there is a fire from this side, you can try to run up towards the door. Right? And to run out. But when you are running towards the door, you see that there is fire there also. Then you think you'll go to the balcony and somehow try to make your way down. Then you go there and you see that there is fire also. How will you feel? There is no way to escape from that. But what did the cowherd boys do? They simply said, Krishna, Krishna, help us. Krishna, Krishna, save us. Krishna, Krishna, protect us. And Krishna said, don't worry. Close your eyes. And as they closed their eyes, Krishna swallowed them. Okay, now you can open your eyes. The fire was gone. Now, is it real or is it a fairy tale? And here comes the faith. If you think it's fairy tale, you'll miss out. But if you accept it with full conviction, it's real, it's true, it's then what will happen? Then when you are in a difficulty, when there is a danger for you, you will take shelter of Krishna. And Krishna will protect. Terrorists will attack, war will break out. Now there is a big fear. Pakistan has nuclear bomb, atom bomb, nuclear bomb, more powerful than atom bomb actually. So they are afraid that if the Talibans get that bomb, then what will happen? They will use it. And there are so many such bombs all over the world. And if they start to drop, then what will happen? There will be mass destruction. Now, what is the way out of that dangerous situation? The only way out is to take shelter of Krishna with full faith. Krishna, Krishna, protect me. There is no harm in praying to Krishna to protect, for protection. There is no harm in that. Yes, you can ask. Prabhupada used to say, if you want something, ask Krishna. So if there is any danger, devotees should not be worried. Krishna will protect. Yes, this body may not be saved. Maybe. But our identity is not this body. Our identity is spiritual. So if I take shelter of Krishna, He will protect me. That faith must be there. And those who have that faith, they are fortunate. And Krishna will protect. We will see that. Now consider, talking about danger, how dangerous is our situation? Can you imagine how dangerous is our situation? Like we are situated on the earth planet, on the surface of earth. The earth is round and the earth is moving with a tremendous speed. Isn't it a very dangerous situation? The earth is moving and we are on the surface of the earth. Is it a dangerous situation? Because we can get thrown out. But we may think, well, it's all right. It never happened. We are safe. But now consider, if the earth stops for a fraction of a second, just something happens, the earth stops. Do you know what will happen? Everything will be finished. But did it happen? Why not? Krishna is protecting. It's Krishna's mercy. So Krishna is protecting us in this dangerous situation. So why should I worry? Krishna is taking care of us. Why should I worry? Therefore, a devotee is free from anxiety. Kuntha. Devotee is free from anxiety. For a devotee, no anxiety. Krishna is there, He will take care. We are already in such a dangerous situation. So many things can happen. There may be an earthquake and everything may fall apart. We don't have to wait for the terrorists. There can be the ocean, ocean waves can rise a few meters. The water from the middle of the ocean can come to the side of the ocean by chance. We have seen like one little wave came. What's the name? Tsunami. Tsunami. It's not tsunami, it's a kunami. So, and you saw the damage, the amount, extent of damage it caused. So many things can happen. But a devotee, when he takes shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, he has nothing to worry. Therefore, the spiritual sky is Vaikuntha, no anxiety. Why? Because everyone is depending upon Krishna. In the spiritual sky, because everyone is depending upon Krishna, therefore they do not have any anxiety. Therefore, that world, that region is free from anxiety, no anxiety. No one has any anxiety. Whereas material nature is full of anxiety. Oh, what will happen? What will happen if I lose my job? Don't people have that anxiety? What will happen if my company fails? What will happen if my customer doesn't pay me the money? What will happen if the government puts so much tax on me? There's so many anxiety in the material nature. What will happen? What will happen? What will happen? But for a devotee, nothing will happen. Krishna will take care. Krishna has already taken care of me. Krishna is taking care of me. And Krishna will continue to take care of me. Therefore, no anxiety. Isn't it a fortunate situation? So that's how fortunate a devotee is. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hari. Does anybody have any question? Yes.
This question is from Guru Varana Guru. Scientists are attached to Avyakta Shakti and don't allow any bridge between God and the world. Scientists are attached to the Avyakta Shakti and don't allow any bridge between God and the world. Shankaracharya's Vaivarta Vad did the same. How do we apprise them of their self-imposed limitation of discovering the unified reality of Krishna, Parinama Shakti, or discovering Krishna's transformation of energies from internal to external?
Well, the Parinam actually means the transformation from internal to external. So, say for example, in the Vedas, there is this philosophy, a branch of Vedic philosophy called Brahma Parinambad. The Brahman or the spiritual energy has transformed into material. But what Shankaracharya came and gave is called Vivartavad, the theory of illusion. You see, Parinam is alright. Parinam is real. Like for example, milk turned into yogurt. So this is Parinam. Milk became yogurt. Milk is real, yogurt is real. But illusion is that it is not there, but it is imagined to be there. So that is called Vivartavad. So this Vivartavad has been established by Shankaracharya, and the foundation on which he established that was there is no water in a mirage, but mirage is mistaken to be water. There is no snake in the rope, but the rope is mistaken to be a snake. So that is Shankaracharya's theory. Like there is no reality in this nature. It is all illusion. It's not real. It's not there. It's all illusory. So that is his Vivartavad, which is commonly known as Mayavad or theory of illusion. But Ramanujacharya defeated that by saying that fine, there is no water in the mirage, but somewhere the water is existing, that's why you are mistaking the mirage to be water. Fine, there is no snake in the rope, but somewhere the snake is existing, that's why you are mistaking the rope to be a snake. Therefore, this material nature may be illusory, but beyond this material nature there is a real reality. And that's how he establishes that the spiritual reality is full of form and variety and personality. Whatever is there in the reflection must be there in the reality. So it's a very deep question you asked Guru Gauranga. Does it answer your question?
So how to convince the scientist of this?
First of all, you have to create the good fortune for the scientists. Ask them. You have to first make them develop faith in the words of the scriptures. Like if somebody has already concluded that A is Y, then how can you convince him that A is A? You have to first make him come out of his misconception that A is not Y, A is A. And how do you get to understand that A is A? Why he is thinking that A is Y? Because, or A is X. Because he did not receive the knowledge from a qualified source. He got, to begin with, he got a whole bunch of wrong information. The wrong information is that A is X. Or A is Y. That is the misconception. Now what they will do? They will keep on going. A is X, A is Y, A is Z, A is W, A is B, A is C, A is D. But they will not understand that A is A. So first of all, they have to accept the authority who has the information. Their main problem is that they are simply depending upon their senses, sense perception, and whole lot of wrong informations that have been injected into their defected brain. What's your comment now, Guru Gauranga?
He's laughing. He's very good.
Thank you. Is there any other question? Yes.
One question from Peter, from Franklin, USA. Do you believe it is possible that preventing devotees from chanting in society has added to the misery which seems to grip the entire world?
Yes. The Harinam is the only remedy for this trouble-ridden world. Harinam. So this Harinam Sankirtan must go on. That is the only way that will save this world. Individually we should chant, and we should encourage others to chant, and in this way we must chant collectively. So that's why we have to start this massive Harinam Sankirtan. Wherever we go, we should ask everyone to chant and encourage everyone to chant, facilitate everyone to chant.
I want to ask one question, Maharaj. What is the relation between the soul and the mind? Because every time our soul takes birth, he has to learn new things. So does it mean the soul doesn't have any intelligence or it doesn't carry any memory?
Yeah. You see, mind is matter also. It is the consciousness, that's the soul, consciousness from the soul. When the soul comes in contact with the material nature, then what happens? The first thing that he encounters is false ego. Right? That is, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, I am the Lord and Master. Right? That's how he develops this false ego. Right? And then it gets covered over, it gets the second covering of intelligence. That how am I going to enjoy this material nature? Then it gets the third covering of mind, through which the consciousness flows towards this direction. It is through the mind that our consciousness is flowing towards this material nature, or projected towards the material nature. So in this way, through the false ego, intelligence and mind, we develop the subtle body. Right? And then according to the subtle body, the nature gives us a gross body. Now, this gross body is temporary. Gross body changes. But the subtle body doesn't change like the gross body does. Like in the sense, the gross body, because it is gross, its activities, it is gross. So then what happens? All of a sudden, we leave the body and we die. The body dies. But the subtle body remains with the soul. It is a subtle body that goes with the soul or carries the soul to the next gross body by nature's arrangement. So now you can consider a child is born. Child is born, the gross body may be a fresh one, a new one. But the subtle body is already there. It's carrying all that those impressions from the past. Right? It has his mind, it's comprising of mind, intelligence and false ego. So that mind has the memory. Or the memory is there. But the thing is, because his consciousness is material, it is projected to the body. You see, that's what happens in the material nature, in our material existence. Our consciousness is limited to the body. So when you get a new body, we think, oh, I got a new body. Right? This is new. It is. So he doesn't have access to the old body's impressions directly. But the memory carries those impressions with the karmic reactions. And then he begins, see, first he gets the body, he thinks, oh, I don't know how to deal with this. Then gradually he learns to deal with that. Right? And then he gets memories related to the body. Then everything becomes related to the body. And whatever is happening to the body, he thinks that it's happening to him. So, you get the point. Like the mind is the carrier of the consciousness. And in the subtle body, in the memory, all the impressions are there, but we do not have access to those informations because we have limited ourselves to this body. So whatever is happening to this body, our mind is tuned into that only. Our memory is tuned into that only. We do not have a direct access to the other body's memories as such.
We see that when Hiranyakashipu tried to kill Balaram Maharaj, he never endeavored to protect himself. Rather, he just closed his eyes and asking to Krishna for protection.
Who?
Prahlad Maharaj. So, in case of us, when if someone, some devotee is in a railway station and there is a terrorist attack, and what he should do. He should just close his eyes and chant Hare Krishna, or he should run and chant Hare Krishna.
That will depend upon that person's faith.
Which one is better?
Now, run means he is making an endeavor.
Yeah.
Right? But depending upon Krishna, okay.
That is the best.
That's the best. But if at the same time we have to use our intelligence also. Right? If by running we can spare Krishna to save us, we can spare Krishna's saving us, then let us make that endeavor. Right? But when we become completely exhausted, we don't have any other course open, then yes, depend upon Krishna. Like, say for example, you know, a train is coming and I am on the platform, on the track. Right? Now if I keep on moving towards the train thinking Krishna will protect me, that's stupid. And that's not faith. I mean, if I can take one step aside and save myself, why shouldn't I do that? Or a car is coming, there is red light, pedestrians crossing red light and green light for the cars. And if I go on to the thing, oh, Krishna will protect me, I don't care. So, we shouldn't be stupid. Right? We should use our intelligence and we should use our ability. But ultimately we know that Krishna will protect us. That faith must be there. Okay. Yes, Chloe? Subtle body and spiritual body, yes. The subtle body is made of mind, intelligence and false ego. And spiritual body is the soul.
Only soul.
Soul's body. Spiritual body.
So if somebody leaves his body and goes back to Krishna, then what happens with the subtle body?
Yeah, that's before in order to go to Krishna, we have to get rid of your subtle body. This subtle body is the biggest problem. If the gross body dies and we are free from the gross body. Right? We don't have the gross body's bondage. These bodies are tying us down to this material nature. So, at some point we become free from the bondage of the gross body. But our problem is that we have the bondage of the subtle body. Mind, intelligence and false ego. The subtle body doesn't die. But the subtle body can be transformed. See, your mind. Through the mind, our consciousness is going towards matter. Right? Now, when the mind is used in thinking about Krishna, then what is happening? The consciousness is not going towards matter. Consciousness is going towards Krishna. Right? So in this way, the mind is now transformed and spiritualized. Now, when intelligence is engaged in serving Krishna, how to serve Krishna, how to serve Krishna, then intelligence is spiritualized. And in this way, when you become a servant of Krishna, then what happens to your false ego? Do you have your false ego then? When you become a maid servant of Krishna? No false ego. So what happened to your mind? What happened to your intelligence? What happened to your false ego? What happened?
Transformed.
Very good. So that means they are not there anymore. So that means at that time you don't have any subtle body. It's the spiritual body existing in this apparently material body, gross body. So that is the state of Siddhya, called Swarup Siddhi. The spirit, perfection of one's Swarup. Perfection of one's identity. At that time, although apparently one is in the material body, but he is situated in his spiritual identity. He's a pure spirit soul, in the material, apparently material body. That material body then is also not material anymore. It is spiritualized. Just like when iron is in fire, what happens? Is it still iron or fire? What? The iron in fire becomes hot, red. Then is it iron or fire? Okay, you're thinking. Touch it. Touch it. Is it iron or fire? Good. Right? So that is how that the body of a pure Sarup Siddha personality is also spiritualized. And then when time comes, by nature's arrangement, for him to leave the body, then he goes back to the spiritual sky. Yes, Ravana. Yeah, but that intelligence will become purified only when the mind is engaged in thinking of Krishna.
So when the mind is higher than, the intelligence is higher than the mind, if the intelligence is direct...
Yeah, right. You had to use your intelligence and decide to become a devotee of Krishna. Right? So that is how the intelligence is used. But when you become a devotee of Krishna, then what happens? Then you engage your mind. So which one comes first is... is relevant.
As you said, Guru Maharaj, that the earth planet moves in ecstasy when Krishna touches it. So, is the other planets also move in the same way, move in ecstasy as Krishna touches it?
As
the earth, you said, that moves around. So, as Krishna touches it, it moves in ecstasy.
Did I say Krishna is moving because Krishna is touching it?
No, it's putting his feet on the earth.
No, no.
Moving
in ecstasy. Oh, okay. That is not. That is Vrindavan. Vrindavan. It begins to dance. It's not moving in the spinning like that. It's always spinning. Yes.
One question from Guru Maharaj's daughter. She is asking, a pure devotee has only pure soul. How does his body exist without subtle body?
How does his body exist? Yeah, you see, Hare Krishna, the body, the gross body doesn't need the subtle body. The gross body, in order to be active, be alive, it needs the spirit soul. Champi, did you understand? The soul is causing the body to be alive, not the subtle body. So for a pure devotee, he doesn't have a subtle body, meaning body consisting of material mind, material intelligence and material false ego. So there, that body has the pure spirit soul in that. Is the answer clear to you, Champi?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
One more question from Peter. How often does someone overcome these subtle bodies?
How?
Often. Does someone overcome this subtle body?
How often? Very rarely. because manushanam sahasreshu, out of thousands and thousands of people, endeavor for spiritual advancement. And out of such thousands of perfected spiritualists, really one becomes a pure devotee of Krishna. So it is those pure devotees of Krishna only who have transformed their subtle bodies or got rid of their subtle bodies by becoming situated in this pure spiritual identity. Is that clear, Peter? It's rare, but the thing is that it may be rare for others, but it's not rare for you. You can become a pure devotee. Just practice the process that Srila Prabhupada gave. Yes. The subtle body doesn't transform like that. You see, the subtle body takes the shape according to his activities, karma. Like, somebody is acting like a very nice way. Somebody is acting like an angel. Then his subtle body takes the shape of an angel's subtle body. Right? But if somebody acts like an animal, what will happen to his subtle body? His subtle body will take the shape of an animal's subtle body. Then, after they leave the human body, the subtle body will carry, by nature's arrangement, to an womb, to an appropriate womb, whose subtle body has taken the shape of an angel's, the nature will take that soul and place him in an angel's body. And somebody who acted like an animal, the nature will place him in an animal body. And according to their subtle body, they'll get their gross body by nature's arrangement. Clear?
My question is where does it take place?
Where does it? It stays in the material nature. Yeah. And it goes to the next mother's womb. And in the womb, it develops the new body. Right? And comes out with it when the production is complete. Right? The womb is the factory where the bodies are manufactured. Like the motor cars are manufactured in the factory. So the bodies, different types of bodies, when they're ready, then the driver begins to drive that body. Who is the driver? Who is the driver? Who drives the body? The soul. The soul is the driver, and the body is the machine. Some bodies are like rickshaws. Some bodies are like three-wheelers. Some bodies are like motor cars. And some bodies are like aeroplanes. Some bodies are like ships. Some bodies are like motorboats. Some move in water. Some move in land. Some move in sky. And there also there are different types of different qualities of bodies. Okay? Are you reading Prabhupada's books? No, then what do we do? Sometimes, okay. Keep as often as possible. Keep reading more often. You're studying now?
Yeah.
What are you studying?
I'm studying
11th. 11? Oh, so you're a very intelligent girl. So you must read Prabhupada's books. Hare Krishna. Gaur Premanande Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki.